traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit energycitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
It was the worst betrayal I'll ever experience in my life, and it was gut-wrenching, and I'd never been sadder in my entire life.
Oh, man.
But from that, and where I took my life in industry, if I could go back, I would not change a single thing.
I'm having such a tough day right now.
You having a hard time?
Well, not as tough as mine. I have a migraine headache, and I want all of the sympathy headed in this direction, please.
How thick is he? So, like, how close can I get?
How thick is Dane Cook?
Yeah.
2 C's. What kind of question is
how
that?
How thick is he? Is he a thick boy, or is he like, I don't know.
I was actually curious. He strikes me as a tall guy. I think he's tall.
He strikes me as a tall guy.
He has one of those hairstyles that goes up.
Oh, it adds a couple inches.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why Jordy don't want to wear the headphones.
One more time in English?
Just came out of my
one
mouth.
More time in English?
That was just gibberish.
Did you say Jordy or George?
It might have been Jordy.
Welcome back to Impulse, the number one podcast in the world. Thank you guys for listening, watching, viewing, and subscribing. If you're not subscribed yet, please hit that button. We're doing cool things on this channel. People are paying attention to us for some reason. I did it.
It's contagious.
No English today.
Do I look good?
You're too close to the guest.
No, he's nice.
Speaking is getting harder. The older I get.
Oh, his hair is probably 6 inches tall. Three and a half inches
Dane,
tall.
Oh, come on in.
He's got, yes.
Yes.
Dude, it looks good, bro. This dude is a good looking chap.
What's up,
brother?
He is good looking. What's up, dude?
Wherever you want.
You can put it all right here.
You could also take your time. No.
You're going to sit here, but you can put your stuff here.
Well, George, you're not giving him much room to sit. That's what we told you.
I just like him.
He is thicker than I thought. You were right. Yep. How are you, bro? Good to see you.
What's up, brother? How are you, man?
Take a seat. Welcome to Impulsive.
Cool.
Take your time, by the way. No rush.
Cans.
We're a little hectic here.
We've been trying to get this podcast for like years, it seems like.
A while. We have a PDF for you.
Yep.
Yeah.
Three pages.
Damn.
Well, I'm a fan, so that makes it a good start.
Thanks, Dane.
All right.
So, how's the sound? Don't want to.
Sounds good.
It's all good.
Do you want to do a delayed intro like you have been doing?
Sure. I got an intro for you.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Ready?
I get to sit here and listen to this?
Yeah.
Oh, this is tough.
There we go.
It's quick.
Our guest today held the mantle of one of the biggest comedians in the world, selling out arenas and platinum albums like no one before. He was a pioneer of the internet and someone we've been wanting to have on the show for a long time. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Dane Cook.
Holy shit.
A pioneer of the internet. Steve Wozniak. We all...
What did I code it? I was in there with HTML just fucking putting the whole thing together.
Yeah, why'd you write that, Dylan?
Well, by the way, it's a one of. It's a V.
Oh,
the pioneer.
Oh, Dylan wrote that?
Yeah.
He's a big fan.
Yeah, you know what? I'm glad you left out the double platinum albums and all the
No, it's in there. No.
Films and television. History book shit. We don't need that.
Do you hate intros, like, when that happens?
Yeah. Here's the thing about comics. You want to get that nice, robust reaction from the crowd, but the more they pump you up, they're setting you up.
100%.
Because if you're not funny in that moment, if you're not, you know, bringing something brand new that evening, all the fucking rah-rah in the world of like, he's here, wow, that's the guy. And then they're like, all right, what do you got? And if you dud on that opening bit, you'd rather come in kind of fucking low-key and then build it up from there.
No, we intentionally did that.
I like that.
Yeah.
Watch how this ends, man. Bloodshed.
So, dude, how are you, man?
I'm good, man. Thanks for having me on the pod. Are
you L.A.-based?
I am, yeah. I bought a home out here about 20 years ago and never left.
Sick, dude.
Yep. Whereabouts?
I came, I'm up Sunset Plaza now, but when I first lived out here, I was fucking all the way out. You know the part of the, you know, people are like, where are you at? And you're like, I'm deep in the valley. And they're like, how far are you? Like, Fresno. I'm in the Fresno portion of the valley.
But I feel like that's like the natural progression of like the LA, like, celebutant. Is like you start in the valley and then you sneak your, if you keep it going well, you sneak your way towards like maybe Laurel Canyon. Then you're where you are now.
I was living in the basement of a Fuddruckers, basically, when I first came out here. I was Holiday Inn, very end of the Barham fucking area, and I came out to do a TV show in 98 with Betty White.
I played Betty White's
grandson on a show that nobody's ever heard of because it was on Saturday nights at 8:30 on ABC. And when I got cast in that show and they were like, we want you to come out and do the show. And I told my family, I'm like, I'm going to be on a show with Betty, Golden Girls, one of the best shows of all time. And they were like, when's it on? I'm like, Saturday nights, 8:30. They're like, yeah, we're not fucking watching. Nobody is home. And by the way, that's when VCRs were around and nobody knew how to even fucking set that. So yeah, I was on a short-lived show that paid next to nothing. And I just stayed out in the valley side and tried to figure out how to work my way over here.
You got a wife and kids, whole family thing?
I got a girlfriend of 5 years that's looking pretty good.
Wow. You know?
I didn't grow up until I hit 40.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Okay. I was in my 20s, I was a real infant. And then in my 30s, I thought I had my shit together. I was like, oh, I'm an entrepreneur. I'm multi-hyphenated. I'm a businessman.
Yeah, yeah.
But I was a fucking idiot. And then right around 38... I just hit a stride and was like, oh, wait a second. I have to actually look at myself in the mirror and be the judge and jury on my, on my decisions and, where I want to take myself and the people in my life. Once I hit that, the last 12 years have been pretty, I don't know. I'm having the best time of my life. I'll say that.
38 was your spot?
38. Yeah.
Sounds a lot like
Mike. Boys. I'm 37.
37? Yeah. Get ready. 38, everything's going to kick in, and then your teeth are going to start falling out.
No, please.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, that's when dental shit starts getting real, man. You're going to fucking root canal coming in about 6 months.
I already have so many missing teeth from the crack. I thought it was over.
Yeah, no, it's years of eating bad pussy. It's on Wikipedia. Let's do that one again. I think that should have been a round of applause, personally, but whatever. Anyway, what's up with you guys is the question.
No.
It's not.
Do you ever take days off from being successful?
I mean,
it's just nonstop.
I refuse.
He definitely doesn't. I mean, he just grinds all day.
Yeah.
He's got WWE, his, Originals Project.
Enough about me.
No, man. I got a lot of respect for you because where we're very similar, even though I'm the old bull, is... I had to do it myself, man. I had to find my audience. I had to figure out, because this town didn't give a shit what I was bringing to the table. At that time, they took a look at me and they were like, no, we already have somebody who kind of moves around and is, is vibrant and fucking, and they just dismissed me.
Why is that, though?
Well, it's because at that point in my life, I didn't have the analytics, which is asses in seats, it used to be called. Now it's whatever, fucking, clicks or follows or likes or... But back then, if you didn't have that data sheet of asses in seats, they didn't care. Didn't care how good your audition was. Didn't care if you were the right guy. You weren't until you tricked the system into making the industry believe you're the right guy.
Industry wasn't willing to take the risk that on someone who could maybe move the needle?
A week before I released my second album, Retaliation, a week before, we couldn't get one publication to write about it. Spin, Rolling Stone, anybody, nobody. Even fucking Harper's Bazaar was not going to take it. When that...
Omen Garden.
When that CD dropped, and I did that with the click of, TikTok 1.0 is MySpace.
Yeah.
And when I clicked send, and I hit a global fan base, 2 weeks after that dropped, it was Jay-Z and me on the top, the actual Billboard Top 100.
Wow.
Holy shit.
Everybody that passed called me. Even people that didn't care about the story.
Yep.
Suddenly the allure was there. So you got to kind of hack the system sometimes and show them what you have, even though they're not willing to take a first look.
Although when those outlets reached back out to you, I'm sure it felt good and it was very beneficial for your career.
Dude.
But did you want to tell them to go fuck themselves?
A couple I did. Yeah. But in a political way, because you're still like, well, we may all meet. And the other thing you learn in this industry is the person you tell go fuck yourself, well, when they're gone 3 months later to a new location that you might be interested in parlaying with, and then somebody else takes over their old job that you actually like, now you've destroyed bridges that are unnecessary. So now you just play it like you missed out, pal.
So
Betty White, 98, right? 8:30 p.m. Saturday night. Nobody wants to watch that shit, especially in Boston or wherever on the fucking East Coast or all at the pubs.
Right.
Right. how do you get from there to Vicious Circle? Like, what does that look like? What was the moment where you were like, holy shit, this is working?
Well, it's probably when Retaliation hit, because I had the first release was Harmful of Swallowed, and that was kind of like underground in college, and it put me on the map. But again, the way the industry looked at it was like, that fad of MySpace, you just got lucky with the click of the, and they didn't think that was the internet was actually the highway
you
that
were
we were
the
all going
to
be strapped.
First comedian to go viral.
Thank you for saying that. I wanted to. Thank you.
No, I was just saying it's
you
really
were
cool.
A pioneer of the internet, weren't you?
So the first one comes out and everybody's kind of like, you know, okay, he's the flavor of the month or whatever. And then when Retaliation comes out, I got a call from Lorne Michaels. I was in Vegas in a hotel room for the Vegas Comedy Festival, and Lorne Michaels calls me. And he goes, I heard about your album. And I said, yeah, man, I'm right next to Jay-Z. And then he just went, you're hosting.
Oh, my God.
And he gave me my first hosting gig on SNL. And after that, it was just game changing. Everything changed after that. Doors were opening left and right. And, it for a little while, it's kind of silly because you're almost like, all right, I'm not this good. I'm good. I'll get better. But there was a period there where it's just like, hey, while the getting's good, you got to take advantage of it.
I recently started stand up, and when I was joining it, I like to kind of step back and look at the greats.
Yeah.
You severely impacted the whole shift of comedy. Like, I'm just talking to people that are great, and they're looking at me, and they're always bringing you up on how you came into the game and completely changed it from... And this is their words, not mine. They go, back then, there wasn't this really good-looking young white kid that was coming in, getting people's attentions from different aspects. Right. You really wanted it, and you weren't scared trying to do it in any other way
possible. First of all, welcome to the fucking party, because it's a wild ride, but if you love it, then stick with it. But I will tell you, it's like, I knew, can I be permission to speak freely?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, here's the thing. I knew I was ahead of the curve with the whole internet thing. I really was like, everyone's fucking wrong, and I'm right. And I'm even telling people, I wasn't even like keeping it to myself. I would go to other musicians and comics and be like, do what I'm doing.
No way.
Do this. Set up the page like this. Offer this. Put your shit for free on Napster and LimeWire and Kazaa and fucking give it away, man.
Oh my God.
Give it away. So a lot of people... not everybody wants to do that. Not everybody loves it. I love it. I love tech. I always liked creating and editing and fucking, what font should I, Helvetica? Fucking bold. Yeah. It's like, I love every fucking,
Comic Sans.
I make my own flyers, dude. It's like, I was doing I was a fulfillment center. I was my own fulfillment center. I was packaging my shit and sending it to people. But in that moment, I knew that generationally, here's what happened. The 80s was a boom. All our favorites that we know today of like the biggest of the Robin Williams and everybody else came. Yep. The 90s, Comedy Central, although offering a bit of a turnstile, then oversaturated the market with a lot of people that were not ready to be out there in a major way. So it gets oversaturated and it kills the comedy album and it kills really live comedy because everybody from the 80s boom was like, oh, who's next? And nobody was next. There was nobody generationally where I knew I was like years of grinding and doing colleges and doing fucking every college. So right around that 99, 2000, when I had that first album, selling it out of my trunk, I was like, I'm winning.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was like, I'm winning.
You're doing it again with your new special. I don't know if we're allowed to talk about it, but I've heard rumors.
I want to talk about it here first because I was like, this seems like the play. I haven't told anybody the title, the director. I've kept it all under wraps, and I was like, this seems like a good synergy because you guys are doing what I did and what we do, which is like, you fucking make waves on your own.
Disrupt. You're a disruptor.
That's it, man. That's really it. I'm impulsive.
Let's go. Us too.
Use that for the fucking promo, bro. Clip it! Clip it! I just fucked my own ears up, so I don't know what I did to you guys, but I just want to apologize for that. We're doing it again.
So wait, are you going to say the things that you just mentioned or no?
Yeah, whatever. I self-financed my special. I did not want to go through a streamer or an outlet first. I wanted to have it all done, finished, all the way to the credit roll. I got Marty Kallner to direct it. He directed Vicious Circle, my first bigger.
This podcast is sponsored by Monarch Money. Are you saving to reach your financial goals? Reaching those goals isn't just about getting more money, but by managing what you have. And the best way to manage your money? Monarch Money. Monarch Money is a new kind of finance app that's intuitive, powerful, ad-free, and takes the headaches out of budgeting. Try it free when you go to monarchmoney.com/podcast. Monarch puts all your accounts, investments, transactions, and finances at your fingertips. With a complete view of your finances, you'll gain insights on your spending and find new ways to save. Plus, Monarch lets you customize your dashboard, collaborate with your partner, set custom budgets and goals, and track your progress toward them. See why Mint users are turning to Monarch Money and loving it, and why the Wall Street Journal named Monarch Money the best budgeting app overall. Get a 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/podcast. That's monarchmoney.com/podcast for your free trial. monarchmoney.com/podcast.
Arena show. And it's been 40,000 people.
It's been a long time since you dropped yours. This is a big thing you're doing. It's been 12 years.
No, 5 years ago I did one called Troublemaker that I directed that I purposely wanted. I always wanted like kind of a bootleg underground type of album. So I put one out there that I never even distributed beyond, we did like a Showtime thing and Comedy Central. And then I took it and I was like, I'm not gonna put this out on DVD or anything. I'm just gonna fucking keep it. And people ask and go, where is it? And I'm like, I got it. Yeah. If you didn't see it, you didn't see it. And that kind of builds up a cool allure.
Yeah.
But once this new one comes out, then I'm gonna start putting some catalog shit out that I didn't release before. But I want this to be like the replanting of what I think is gonna be the comedy flag. The comedy flag is being replanted with this special because aesthetically, nothing looks like this. Mm. I'm sick of comedy specials that don't look unique. They don't have a great theme. Mm. They look fucking dull. They look cheap. And it cheapens the performer. And I have friends that have specials out there right now. I'm like, why? Just be patient, man. You got the fans. Make it great.
Yeah.
Don't let these fucking people come in and set you up to be okay. You know what I mean? So we shot something that I think is, I'll show you a piece of it after we're done. I got it on my phone.
I'd if love you want to
see a little piece, man.
I'd love to see.
What's the distribution angle for it?
Well, right now what I'm going to do is we're meeting with buyers, streamers and all that. But I love what Andrew Schultz, I don't know, like if you saw the news today, dude, he just did it himself.
Yeah.
He made more, I think, than what he would have probably had. His fans are happier with the way he's putting it.
Do we know the numbers? I've been so curious to see how his self-release would go.
I saw the thing today and it said he made like his $1 million or whatever back that he, like within a week.
He bought it back from Amazon.
Well, yeah.
Amazon. Yeah. Okay.
And that's why I was asking about distribution, because how much of you know, his release and then also like the stuff that Chappelle's doing nowadays is like coming back to censorship, right? So like there was a whole story about how Schultz didn't want to release it through a big streamer because they wanted to cut a bunch of shit out about abortion.
Smart.
And stuff like that. He is one of the comedians that are beyond, like he knows the future.
It's like here's the line, here's Schultz, and then like here's like Tim Dillon somewhere, like way beyond censorship. Tim Dillon just doesn't give a fuck about it.
But if Schultz had put out something that was lesser than whatever his fans are clamoring for, they all would have watched it and been like, what?
Yeah, 100%.
What?
Yeah.
It's almost, and so I think he's absolutely done this the right way, because now his fans that are already there are going to love it, and now he's getting press beyond it, so he'll probably find new fans. And
this podcast is sponsored by Monarch Money. Are you saving to reach your financial goals? Reaching those goals isn't just about getting more money, but by managing what you have. And the best way to manage your money? Monarch Money. Monarch Money is a new kind of finance app that's intuitive, powerful, ad-free, and takes the headaches out of budgeting. Try it free when you go to monarchmoney.com/podcast. Monarch puts all your accounts, investments, transactions, and finances at your fingertips. With a complete view of your finances, you'll gain insights on your spending and find new ways to save. Plus, Monarch lets you customize your dashboard, collaborate with your partner, set custom budgets and goals, and track your progress toward them. See why Mint users are turning to Monarch Money and loving it, and why the Wall Street Journal named Monarch Money the best budgeting app overall. Get a 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/podcast. That's monarchmoney.com/podcast for your free trial. monarchmoney.com/podcast.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit energycitizens.org.
paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
I just think it's great. I think that when you can do it yourself, when you can own your IP, kids, that's intellectual property.
Yeah.
Own it.
Yeah.
Okay? Because when you give it to somebody else who's a passionless fucking pencil pusher who just is trying to figure out what maybe their boss or bosses like or don't like, you're in some deep doo-doo.
Yeah.
So do it yourself, and then once you have it landed, then hopefully they'll come a-calling and want to lease it or whatever else.
We had Logic on yesterday, and he retired, I think it was 3 years ago, and then came out of retirement, and he's just dropped an album. And I asked him if he was nervous for his return, right? When you take that much time off,
right.
You know, you I don't want to say lose touch, but how do you know? How does he know that his stuff is still good? I mean, it's Logic, it's fucking good.
Right.
Your Dane Cook is still good. But are you nervous for the return?
I don't want to say I'm nervous. I think I always get a little bit trepidatious anytime because I like turning corners and I don't want to be derivative. So I know everything I've ever done is like, okay, I know some people are going to tap out. And I know some new people, if they take a minute, I'm going to get them. Mm. So I like the, and that's what I'm a fan like that. I'm a fan that watches somebody. Growing up, I loved Aerosmith. Then they did some stuff that I was like, I'm going to tap out. But then they came back with something else. And I was like, that's fandom. I have to accept that that's fandom. I had fans that saw me in college, grew apart from me, and now they're at their show with my kid that watched Employee of the Month. So now, generationally, I got a couple people that are like, hey man, I like that I'm growing up with a generation of comedy fans. I'm 50, now I've grown up from when I started at 19 with my generation of comedy fans, and they brought their kids, so now I've got that generation of comedy fans. So I'm not nervous, but I'm excited. I'm anxious.
Yep.
You know, I'm ready to go, man.
Sick.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask about Good Luck Chuck, Employee of the Month. You got to star across from some of the most beautiful, sought-after women on the planet. And that was kind of in tandem with this, you know, ever-exploding comedy career. Did you have a preference of the two being on the you know, silver screen or being in front of a crowd? Because you were selling out stadiums at the time.
Dude, I couldn't even believe it. I was like, I got a big Irish fucking head, you know, kid had childhood acne. I'm like, I'm fucking ruggedly handsome, maybe on a fucking good day, but I wake up, I look like a fucking Sharpay. You know what I mean? I'm one of those people, I wake up and I like, you know, my face is like, nah, I need like 15 more minutes, man. Like, ice everything.
And it's so funny because my girlfriend does that every morning.
Did she roll her face?
No, she does worse. She goes, George, you wouldn't even believe it. I saw this on TikTok. And then she dunks her face in ice water for 10 minutes. I go, first of all, breathe. You're going to die. And then she comes up. She's like, no, I'm. And you know what? We did it. And it was fucking amazing.
I'm just curious when that happened. I'm just curious
we were
when you guys.
Fucking snatched as shit.
Go ahead and tell me when you guys dumped your faces in ice water together.
Yeah, we've been hanging, bro. We've been hanging, bro.
All right. You ever try that, Dave?
You ever the face in the ice water? Oh, dude, anything. When you're doing a movie and at like 5 or 6 a.m., they're like, make up and get ready to go. You're like, dude, I'll do voodoo. Like, whatever I got to do to not look fucked up on screen, yeah, I'll do that.
Yeah.
But when all that happened, it was cool because it was from stand-up. It wasn't like I was plugged in and I was like, oh, I'm fucking Johnny Bravo. And I'm not, like, I was being invited to the inner circle by like people that were either directors that were fans or writers that were fans, producers. And I got to really experience an echelon of this industry that I deserved it. I fucking earned it. And even though I made mistakes and I definitely, you know, made some weird decisions, it was like, nah, this is the result of hard work, my own hard work.
Just to reiterate what he was saying though, because, you know, we come from digital and traditional is vastly different. There's a lot of hurry up and wait. There's a lot of pretentiousness that we just don't like. Did you have a preference doing everything your own?
Stand up.
Yeah.
But nope, then, nothing better.
So then why did you do traditional Hollywood?
Well, because it was fun. It was stand up is such a lonely road. You know what I mean? It's like you're isolated. It's you and then a group of people and then they disperse. And the idea of being like a piece of a puzzle for someone else's vision is really alluring to me. Mm. That's why, like today, it's like I like being able to do things that are outside of the box of stand up. I like to be behind the camera and tell different kinds of stories. My whole thing is I never wanted to grow in stand up as like the same kind of performance performer. I wanted to grow up and emulate my heroes that allow themselves to be like this new special. Like I'm self deprecating. I'm taking the piss out of myself. I'm talking about some fucked up things that I did in my life. And doing it in a funny way because I want to be able to to continue to grow and evolve my fans, you know, and my comedy. So
it's funny that you brought up comedy being like a lonely road, because I've always looked at similarly to how you talk about boxers, and when they walk in a room, when they're one of the best boxers in the world, everybody's like, yo, that's so-and-so, right? And it's like this elevated state. I look at comedy and like the top comedians at that time the same way, right? Like people are like, yo, there's fucking Chappelle. Like they're always like elevated at the parties. They're always like that in that like siloed space of just like being like the hero of the room. Did you ever struggle with like ego as a result of that, where you just were like, yo, I'm doing this by myself, I'm the fucking man? And when you did that ever like get to that ego?
Yeah, but mine was really I'm not going to get in the weeds about like the psychology of it. I was a kid with a lot of self-loathing. I was a kid who was not a class clown. I felt very isolated. I was a lonely kid who wanted acceptance. So what happened to me was, when I finally broke through and I had everybody trying to hit me up and, you know, hang with me, it was almost like I protected myself, because I was like, wait, where were you for the earlier part of my life? And I could kind of sense that it was a little bit of like a facade. But it's also in this industry, if you don't protect yourself and you don't sometimes, in a real terse, no bullshit way, tell somebody no, then they're going to take advantage of you for their own pocket. Okay. So they're going to plug you into their thing, and they don't really care if your fans are completely satisfied with that, but they'll care when they're paying their mortgage and they get what they need from you. And so that's where my ego came from. I was like, I'm not, just because I'm here now doesn't mean like everybody gets to, you know, take a piece. And so from that, people will say, well, you're not easy to deal with, or you can be an asshole. And it's like, well, if I did what you want and what everybody wanted me to do, what the fuck would I be at all? I would probably not be invited to anything at this point. I'd be ass out, you know?
Well, you're talking about handouts and people taking advantage. And unfortunately, you have one of probably the most documented cases of...
I didn't bring it up. He did, bro.
Someone taking...
He did drugs.
Oh, no.
Well, we don't have to talk about it, but it's...
No, we can talk about it.
It's just a tough situation when the one person or group of people that you would expect not to take advantage of you do so. Right. And so...
What we're talking about for the...
Thank you.
...kids at home. I put my brother in prison because my brother worked with me at my company, and he was nefarious. He was taking... And so I did what anybody should do when someone steals from you, which is you put him in jail.
Is he still in jail?
No. He served all his time, and now I don't even know where he is.
Just he stole $12 million from you.
on the low end.
It's a lot of money.
There's actually, and I hope this is not sensitive. There's
you like, found some.
No,
oh, I'm gonna take a guess.
I was hoping he was gonna bring a fucking
is it a
Pulp Fiction briefcase? We got a surprise for you, man.
Here it is.
We brought your brother. What the? Clip it.
There was like an inside like joke. They're like, dude, he's so rich, he did not know that $12 million was missing. And I was like, how the fuck are you that loaded, bro?
Yeah, how did you not notice?
He's fucking loaded, bro.
Honestly, it's kind of true, because I was still living a certain lifestyle.
It's kind of true. I'm rich.
I wasn't looking, and also to put it with a little bit of a fucking score under it, like, guys, I'm a welfare kid out of Boston, Massachusetts. Food stamps, free lunch tickets. The fact that I was making any kind of living, let alone where I had, you know, gotten to, it was like, I didn't care.
Yeah.
I've never cared about the fucking money so much. I put it into this special. I put everything back into work. And yeah, I'd like take a little piece off and I'll get myself a nice fucking Jeep or something. But the reality is, I wasn't looking, because I have love of the game, man. I had to learn to be a businessman, obviously, from that. And nobody has power of attorney. Another thing you kids want to look into. But the reality is, it was the worst betrayal I'll ever experience in my life. And it was gut-wrenching. And I'd never been sadder in my entire life.
Oh, man.
But from that, and where I took my life in industry, if I could go back, I would not change a single thing. Mm. Because it made me who I am today.
I love that.
Yeah.
Are you close with him now, or
never spoke to him after that?
No way.
To him for my whole life leading up to the day he went on the run, and then the day he was gone, my brother was gone.
Oh my god.
Older or younger?
Older. I saw him in court. I actually had to go into court, and I had to read what's known as a victim impact letter. once they had them. And so I walked into the car. I got a brand new fucking Dolce & Gabbana suit.
You got to really stick it.
Oh, dude, I walked good in. Doing I had it. A fucking fresh cut. You know what I mean? Got a facial, right?
Yeah, looking like Johnny Depp out right? there.
Yeah, I walked into that courtroom, fucking those little saloon doors. I fucking kicked them.
It was an old Western court. You had to do a draw behind the place afterwards.
Bro, I walked in there like a person that knew, and what I told him when I read the letter, I've never told anybody this before, but what I said in the letter was, you can steal anything you want from me, and you did, but the thing that you really want that you'll never have is what's in here. I said, you could never take that.
You're right.
I looked at him, dude, when you want to talk about looking into the eyes of a fucking shark, like if a shark was just sitting in court with you, that's what it was like. My brother wasn't there. Whoever he really is was like, it was maniacal, man. It was weird.
Wow.
Yeah. Would you ever consider, based on any type of reform,
moving back in with him and sharing an apartment?
Would you guys would you guys move back to Lowell, Mass, or wherever the fuck?
The fact that you said fucking Lowell, Mass, like someone says they're from Lowell, Mass, is why I like you, Mike. From fucking Lowell, Mass.
Shout out.
Dude, I'm from Lowell, Mass. You want to fight me on a fucking burning couch? Let's go. What was your question?
Do you want to go to Cape Cod with them? Is what I'm asking. Do you want to go to Brewster?
I'll tell you again, I'm breaking a lot of...
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit energycitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
Info here, you're going to get a lot of, you know, moments that nobody's heard me talk about. I just got financing on a documentary. I'm doing a documentary about it. Sick. I'm going to tell the story. So if he wants to at some point sit and we can sit for the first time really ever, like it would be the first time I'm really meeting him, then maybe we can sit down for this doc. But we start filming this at the end of the summer, and it's going to be the funniest tragedy that you've ever seen.
That's fucking awesome. Yeah, I love that. I love that reconciliation. I hope that he does it.
Yeah.
And I know the conversation is going to be hard, but I will say, as someone who does put a lot of their life forward facing for people to see, it is incredibly therapeutic and can be incredibly healing. And it is a chance to acknowledge your wrongs and start fresh.
Right.
And it's going to be hard for him too. I'm sure he's incredibly embarrassed.
Way harder.
Yeah, I'm sure he feels horrible, but like, you're going to live out the rest of your life like that? Or for once and all, final, take accountability, right? And then make something great out of it. Make a great piece of media.
That would be, I would love that, man. Like, you putting that out, like, honestly, if that could happen to me, that would be, because it's also a fascinating conversation. And it speaks to, there was a lot of growing I needed to do in my life, whatever. I can't speak for him, but like, the reality is, If you're ever judged by one moment in your life, nobody would want that. Nobody wants that tag on them. We all would be, everybody. We all want the opportunity, but when you're in the public eye or whatever people want to like put the moniker on, you know, your fuck up sometimes is something that speaks to someone's own failure, and they'll project that on you for the rest of your life, determined by how they feel about themselves, is really why people do that and lash out.
I think about this stuff a lot too, because there's a lot of people that have like people watching the show. Most families have like inner family beefs. Oh, he did something to me 15 years ago. Right.
Who ate my ice cream? My $15 million dollars? You know, just run of the mill Tuesday night shit.
But it just always it always just makes me wonder though. Like, is there anything that's beyond? Because, dude, you only get one family, right? And it's like.
I don't know if I subscribe to that.
You got 2 families?
No, you have the family of people that, you know, I have people that I've met in my life that are like road dogs, and people that are like feel like they're in my bloodline. You know what I mean?
What's that saying again? It's like family is
thicker than.
No, that's the main one. But then there's one that's like family is like who you make, not who you're.
Home is where you make it.
Yeah, that's it. Sweet Home Alabama.
I'm sorry about that.
I think it was all that.
It was impulsive. I don't know. I followed it.
You
broke records for doing stand-up. You've done 7 hours straight.
List all of them.
Okay.
Every city.
7 hours.
Wait a second. No, that's not a
with
record.
With the biggest dick.
The Chappelle and I thing? Nah, that's
second comedian ever to sell at Madison Square Garden.
Yeah.
That's all I get, though.
Yeah, that's it.
I'm
walking down the hall. Dude, I'm walking down the hall at Madison Square Garden. I'm like, Zeppelin was here. Like, you're walking down, you're looking at all the posters. All right, let me tell you. When you walk down, like, SNL, and you see everybody you fucking love ever, and then you're there, dude.
By yourself.
All, you know, right? Mostly.
By yourself.
Right? Standing in
no
a hallway
band,
alone, right?
No.
Same kid by himself on the fucking playground that nobody wanted to play kickball with. And now I'm like, I'm fucking here. Because one person believed in me. And then other people that love you go like, I'll buy into your bullshit. I kind of like you. I'll get behind it. I'll support.
Just not Saturday at 8:30. Just not. Any other time. It's not
you
that.
Motherfucker. With the callback.
Wow, that was great.
But the reality is standing there at fucking whatever, Madison, Boston Garden, SNL, and remembering, and you need to remember this too, and it's something that, you know, Logan's done in his life. I can't speak for Mike. I don't read your Wikipedia.
Have you read his book?
But the real reality is there's one thing alluring in the world. One. And that's the truth. Even if it's the wrong truth, even if it's a truth that you don't, even if it's the opposite of your truth, but if you're speaking your truth and you're coming from your place, your personal constitution, it's alluring and people can't fucking not watch. Mm. It's the secret sauce to anything that you put up. But if you're false, if you put up a facade or you're kind of phony or you're trying to fucking win the majority, you're done.
Dude, that's so crazy.
It's the beginning of your end.
I love that.
I was, I'm getting mentored by Joe Coy.
Okay.
And I got
very
to,
funny, very funny guy.
And I'm blessed to be able to do this. I go out and I do my thing, and he makes me bring it back to him. We sit on his couch and we'll watch it, and dead ass, he'll pause it. He goes, "That story you just told me was false." He goes, "It's trash. Stop making up stuff." He goes, "Tell your truth." And I was like, "How the fuck did you know?" He goes, "Not only will I know, but the world will know."
Right.
Never ever lie.
It's true.
He goes, "Stretch out the truth, make it funny." He goes, "But don't bullshit it."
Yeah, embellish, you know, add comedic effect and all the things that you can do to stitch together that it, you know, it's also a occupation. You curate ideas and you have to sell it every night. So yeah, there's showmanship, but if the core of it, this Patrice O'Neill taught me this. I started with Patrice O'Neill who passed away a number of years ago, but he was the guy that was like, "Just be the truth, man, because when you're up there and you're coming from your heart, even if somebody's like, "I don't like this," they will listen. They can't not.
Yeah,
people, they might tap out. They might eventually be like, "All right, this isn't for me." But more often than not, you're going to connect because emotions connect more than the funniest bit in the world with emotion at the core of it. That's where you're going to win. That's what makes them clap. A laugh is one thing. When they're really clapping, it's because they're saying like, "I am with you on this. Mm. I agree." Either vicariously living through you, because they don't get it and that's not how they live, or "This motherfucker read my diary. This is it. That's exactly me," even if it isn't exactly you. So all those things, man, he's, you know, Joe Coy is obviously a success for those reasons. Man.
That's amazing that you know that, dude. Not, thanks for that.
Thanks, dude.
Speaking of the laugh,
let's take your head some.
I want to say this really quick. That the fact that as a comedian you know about the importance of like relatability and passion as it pertains to like that type of way of speaking is amazing, because there's a lot of dude, like, we sit on this podcast and do thousands of hours of podcasts and make thousands of jokes. Everybody laughs, and I hate to say this, but laughs are forgotten. But if you're able to make someone feel something deep in their my most viral clip ever that I've ever made was me speaking about a drug addiction, because I was a heroin addict for 8 years. That clip has been shared more than anything I'll ever do in my life. And so the fact that you understand the importance of emotional connection and probably can then tie that into your comedy is why you're a fucking legend.
I appreciate that, dude. And the fact that you could share something that's, you know, I've never experienced the gut-wrenching real-time experience that you had is a testament to who you are. But it's also like in our time on this planet, man, people just want to find things that they can embolden their own ideas with. It really is all about projection, and somebody sees that and goes, "Oh, maybe I can be healthier." You know what I mean? And then hang with fucking cool people and Dane Cook.
I can double get out platinum. Of, I, can get out of, I can get out of whole ass.
but it's also like when I think about the moments in my life where it's like I got to be around other people that I grew up like loving and wanting to emulate and get a little time with them, and you know break bread and finally get to ask those questions like, man, like, how did you maintain? What was your, you know, you try to find those nuggets, you know, of like, and every single person I've had that opportunity with has always said, oh man, it was at the worst moment of my life when I finally realized, and then they start giving me the building blocks and you're like, I never knew you fucking struggled like that or had fear. And so with this new special I'm putting out, it's I talk about that. Amazing. I talk about a fucking stalker story that I've dealt with over a violent stalker that's come after me, that tried to get into my, like, and I'm sharing these things that are like stark, really caustic stories, but they're fucking funny.
He came after you?
She.
Oh, yeah. Boy. Yeah.
The whole opening of my special is me talking about this. It's actually still, it's still ongoing.
Was
but
she bad?
It's bad.
No, was she bad?
I'm sure she was. Yeah,
I wouldn't hire her as a housekeeper. I would tell you that right now. She would clean me with a knife.
Oh wow.
But really, honestly, it's talking about those things that have impacted you and broken you down to go like, oh wait, no, I needed to find something in this that that is inspiring and something in this that's very funny.
Yeah.
Right. That's our ultimate goal. So that's what you guys will see when the new one drops.
I actually met you before I met Logan.
Where at?
When I came out here, I had a girlfriend. She became a porn star later on. So
whoa, what's no that? What's
not entirely. She just made a couple porns that were then deleted.
Yes. Well,
what's her name?
You've done thousands. Oh, I can put her name out there.
I just meant for research.
You've done thousands of shows, so you might not even remember this, but I came. It was my first weekend in LA, and I was like, yo, what am I? I'm going to take this girl out. She's visiting me. What am I going to do? And I was like, dude, I'm going to look up a comedy place. So I looked up. I see Dane Cook. I go, oh, my God, B&E, Snickers. I go, this is it. I'm living my childhood. So I go, and I made the first mistake. It's my first comedy show.
Yeah.
I sit in the very front row.
Ah.
I didn't know this is where target practices were taking place. I sat there, I see you looking at me, and then looking at my girl, and then looking at my girl, and I have to pee. And I'm like, I'm not getting up.
Oh, boy.
I go, I know he's going to say some shit when I get up to go pee. We're at the Laugh Factory. I'm like, I got to pee. So like, fuck it, I'm going to go. So I get up. I walk. But I'm like, you know what? Let me just hear to see if he says some shit. I walk around the corner and he goes, is he gone?
Oh, boy.
And he goes, what's up with it? And I come back. I go, no. And I literally make you laugh so hard you dropped the mic.
This happened?
This is a moment.
So I was talking to your girl when you left and trying to find out, like, size you up or, like, figure out what's up with this guy. And
yeah, you said I looked like somebody who sells cologne at a mall.
That's true.
you do.
At a kiosk.
Yeah, you do. You do look like a kiosk
And then
guy.
I dished something back, and then I made you laugh, made you drop the mic, and then you actually made me stand up and everybody clapped. So it was, like, a really cool moment that I'll always remember. Thanks for forgetting it. It's fucked up. I thought you were going to be like, oh, my God, that was you. No, I guess I'm forgettable. I thought you were going to be like, I go to bed every night thinking about that guy. I wanted to meet him again. Nope, you don't.
Every time I'm at the mall, I hope he tries to sell me cologne.
That was one of my things in my shtick when I used to come out here. Is like, if somebody was in the front and one person left, I would try to break them up. Like, I wanted you to come back. By the time you sat down, I would try to inject something that would make this person think differently of you. I was like, all right, I got two. It's like a game show. I got 2 minutes to figure out why they shouldn't be together. But luckily, it didn't go that way for you, or maybe it did.
Wait, we're not together anymore.
Okay, so. Cut this part off. This part. This is where we're lingering.
And she became a porn star.
Nobody gives a fuck. All right. Got it.
Yo,
don't clip it.
You talked about looking to people that you looked up to for gems and wisdom. Who were your inspos? Who were your big inspos?
Ooh, man. I mean, there's a lot of people in stand-up, obviously. But I think that, like, in real life, I had a great mentor, Frank Roberts. He kind of taught me everything about how to just approach anything creatively. But in terms of stand-up, I loved Carlin.
Oh, God.
And so I watched, I was 11 years old when I saw Carlin's On Location. It was called On Location. 1978, it was filmed, and I got a hold of it. It was probably on HBO. I was not supposed to be
watching it. That's what I was going to say. You shouldn't have been watching George Carlin at that age, at 11 years old.
But check this out. This is like, again, when you talk about, like, you know, serendipitous and putting your whole belief and willing, you know, some people call it manifesting, but I just really think it's like the willpower. You want to, you know, put on size, get to the gym, you know, put in the work, put in the 10,000 hours. I watched that special. I see the name Marty Kollner. Cut to many years later, I start playing in the round. Marty Kollner had directed Carl in 78. It was in the round at Arizona Celebrity Center, in the round, like 1,000 people. So I was like, I love the round. I think it's a great place to entertain, because something I learned from my mentor, Frank Roberts, when I would do theater, do plays, he would say to me, you want to turn your back to the audience here and then take your hat off. And I would say, why would I want to turn my back to the audience? And he was like this old school, real dramatic drama teacher. He went, because there's nothing more powerful than the reveal. And I was like, wow. So I'm like, in the round, you're constantly, you know, revealing yourself, right? And so I start doing it in the round, cut to HBO, 2005. They give me my first HBO special. They say, where do you want to do it? I say, I want to do it in an arena. I want to do it in like 20,000 people. And I want Marty Kollner, who directed Carlin in 78 in the round, to come back. I met with Marty. He hit it off. He was like, I'll direct it. And I've been working with him ever since.
I remember that special. Huge. And I remember thinking to myself, how the fuck does he decide, like, where he's going to fit, like, face? Like, it just brings a whole different dynamic of comedy to have a 360 degree, like, decision-making process going on.
Well, it's like, and also I'm in Boston, and I'm at the Boston Garden. You can remember, I was doing hell gigs for 10 years in front of fucking nobody. I was doing gigs in and around Boston in the 90s, where it was like, I was driving to gigs where nobody would give a shit that I'm coming, and nobody gave a shit when you left. That was the early part of a comedy career. So now, standing in the Boston Garden, everywhere I turned that night, I was seeing people. There's a girl I dated. There's my eighth grade teacher. That, you know, my first booker who gave me my first $10 gig.
I'm not gonna lie.
And so every time I turned, it was like, and I'm a person who looks at, some people don't look at the audience. Some comics you'll talk to, they're like, oh, I never look. I look at fucking everybody. I look at every single person.
I know.
I'm trying to, right? I'm trying to dig some fucking reality out of anything that I can look at. And that night, spinning around like that, every time I landed on somebody, I was like, I know him. I know her. That's the cop that pulled me over with the fuck. And it was amazing. That to me was like, this is going to be the bar that for the rest of my life, I try to beat.
Yeah.
My own night is going to be the bar.
That's the coolest thing ever.
Yeah, man. It was fun, bro.
I want to know about the rock star phase.
Yeah.
You had one?
Yeah.
This excites me.
Yeah. That's why I finally, like at 38, was like, I got to get smart, because there was that. I remember one time being like, I don't know if I should tell. I remember one time I saw Bruce Willis out when I was first in Hollywood. Man, all these beautiful women were around him. Man, he's Bruce Willis. And fucking, you know, Die Hard. Like, I saw Die Hard at the Burlington Mall when I was a kid. And I remember seeing that movie and being like, I want to be this guy. This is, like, unbelievable. In fact, my house now, I look at Nakatomi Plaza. To this day, I'm seeing the Die Hard. Like, I fucking, and so I see him. Dude, I'm fucking, I'm like, this is the guy. I see him out one night at, like, Hyde or whatever, like, you know, one of the... Right? Or whatever, the fucking voyeur. You know what I mean?
It's old location. It wasn't even where it is now.
Right? The peppermint something bullshit, whatever. And then I seen him like 15 years later in this place. Like, on that night, it was a whole different vibe. And I kind of looked at him, and I swear to God, it was like almost like he remembered us looking at each other 15 years sooner. And he was like, and he kind of went like still here. Like, and I was like, yo. I think it's time to start. I think it's time to start broadening my horizons. And yet, I will tell you, I enjoyed every bit of my single life, and I played it up to the hilt, and it was awesome. You know, I was the fucking unluckiest kid in high school who could barely get a girl to look at me, and now the whole world was like my oyster for a little bit. And if you don't think I didn't take full advantage of that. You're a fool. I did.
Damn, y'all got Bruce Willis out there. Yeah. We got Guy Fieri. That's like our Bruce Willis.
Right.
He's out there in Flavortown on the weekend.
I get it.
He's fucking turning up.
He's in Dives and Diners.
Yeah, 100%.
You know what I mean? Eating a fucking oyster dipped in fucking batter that's dipped in a fucking
chocolate bar.
Right. it was yeah, it was awesome, man. It was a great era, that whole thing, you know, that whole part of my life. But in the middle of it was this thing with my brother. So when I do the doc, I'm gonna share all those stories of what was it like to fucking be like, you're on fire, it's going hot. Nobody knew how to talk to me. My friends were like, we don't even know if we're like, can hang with you. And I'm like, that's ridiculous. But, and then new people want to be in your life for absolutely no reason. And in the middle of that fucking earthquake of a moment was this thing with my brother. So it was the pipe dream height of my career coupled with the abyss of fucking tragedy and fear happening at the same time.
Fascinating.
Yeah, man, it's gonna be. I hope it's good.
That's so cool.
Did it take away from it?
What did I take away from it?
No. Did it take away from it? Like,
I thought at the time, I was like, wait, oh man, I kind of had like a wise me. I felt bad. Like, why is me? Why is this happening to me? But when I finally got back on my feet, I was like, I'm kind of glad that happened because that actually just fucking kicked me out of like the haze of thinking I'm too important or whatever I thought I was for a little while. When there's no playbook and you're famous, and then you're kind of like, I guess I call the shots. Like, this is my fucking simulation. I run this whole thing now. And it knocked me back into a place where I was like, I'm just a kid from Arlington. I'm a fucking kid who had nothing growing up. And I'm going to do everything I can for the rest of my career to only deliver when I have something great. And that's why I tap out. You know the stories you hear of people saying, like, they learn later in life, hey, you know, one thing I look back on and I wish I took more moments because I worked so hard. I listened to that. So when I was like 30, I was like, if I don't have something to say, I'm not showing up. Sometimes where you don't show up is more important than where you do.
Law of scarcity.
You know?
Yeah. Laws of power.
Yeah. So when I come out with this, I've got a Gatling gun now and I'm coming out with something brand new that I know is undeniable. And so it did. It fractured me. And it took a lot of therapy and a long time for me to look back and realize, like, man, I'm glad that happened because I was kind of becoming a person that I didn't really know.
The adolescent in me is asking this question. So he kind of mentioned it earlier. But
hold on, let me tap into the adolescent in me.
Back to Lowell, Mass, ladies and gentlemen.
No, so you know, throughout high school, you know, internet's coming out and your stuff's popping off, right? We're massive fans, and then you have these movies. Good Luck Chuck, Jessica Alba, and then Employee of the Month,
right?
Jessica Simpson,
right?
Two very attractive Jessicas. Like, I had crushes on them in high school, like everyone else. When you get cast with these types of top tier women,
right?
Are you just foaming at the mouth? I have to know, man. Like, like some of the most beautiful women on the planet, and you from Lowell, Mass.
You realize at that moment in your life that there's two decisions you can make when you're in a position to cast. Like, I'm working with Lionsgate. They were my partner on eight films I produced with them. And at first, the boy in you is like, who's the girl that I like? And then you very quickly realize, if I just cast somebody based on that, I'm fucked. Because they may not be right for the role, and it's just not going to be the right synergy. So I feel like I did a pretty good job at working with people that I thought were really entrepreneurial and great and came to the set with like not feeling that it was a hang, but feeling like it was work, you know?
You cast them?
Oh, yeah. I had say in all the casting on all the films.
Did you have chemistry reads with them?
I don't know if I did chemistry read. I might have had one on Employee of the Month, I think.
Okay.
Because people weren't into at the idea of Jessica Simpson at that time because she wasn't known
for acting.
But I thought she was very winning. And when I met her and I knew her from Newlyweds and stuff, I was like, I think she's the right choice. I think there was something that at that time especially was just very like down home about her. So I probably made the decisions you're talking about, fortunately, when I was like, the college act and just coming up, I had about 5 years before the movies where I was fucking rabble rousing, man. I was a pirate. And then I realized, all right, when I go to work, you're not
doing that.
You want a professional who shows up like you do, who's like, how can we take these 16 hours and make some fucking greatness so that an editor doesn't go, yeah, these two like each other, but this stinks.
Yeah. Yeah.
How did you bounce around with no social media?
What do you mean?
Like, if we were, like, blowing up and we wanted to, like, I don't know, like, say, Logan was interested in Zendaya, just send her off a tweet or like a DM. Or,
yeah.
But like, did you have to meet them at a a club?
Or? The version of that was AOL Instant Messenger was that was the early sliding into the DMs. Yeah.
Like you just opened the door.
I had that on my MySpace, and I was like, hey, if anybody wants to aim me, and people would hit you up on there. So it was back channel. It's the same shit, right? As now. Yeah. But that
was
my
icon in the center. You know that little icon that you. Mine was Do the Do. And it was a little guy humping a Mountain Dew can.
Oh my God. That's hilarious.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah, it was the icon thing you choose. And then that kind of described who you were as a human. And it was just a guy humping a Mountain Dew. It was like, Do the Do. I don't know why I thought it was so funny.
It's like a scene from that movie Role Models where they're like promoting that energy drink and they drive the truck on the back of the bowl in front of the school. You thought Jessica Alba was going to be entrepreneurial.
Yeah, well,
that's what you said. How right you were?
I thought, obviously, yeah, billion dollar woman. But it's like when she showed up for that, again, it was like the beautiful girl that people aren't expecting is going to walk into a fucking pole look like a doofus. And when she showed up and was like, I want to, yeah, like slapstick. And she, you know, it's like a sex romp. And we're, you know, and she was like, I'm ready to go for it. I was like, that is who you want. You don't want somebody people expect to, you know, to be just sexy for the sake of being sexy. You want somebody that brings so much more to whatever it is that they're doing. So I got lucky. And then when I did Best Friend's Girl, you know, Kate Hudson is like from comedic royalty. So when she said she wanted to do that film with me, I was like, I couldn't have sent her enough, you know, fruit baskets and appreciation because she made me look even better in that movie because she was so good.
Hecklers are the worst thing ever. when I'm at comedy shows, I hate them, and I always feel so much empathy for the
comedy. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Have you had some pretty hectic hecklers?
Oh man, yeah, yeah. I've definitely and that's where you cut your teeth in stand up. Really, it's almost like you know, you've got this act, and you're precious about it, and you know, it's like I want to hit my punchlines and hit the button and the tag, and then this heckler comes in, and what they do is they're disruptive, but they're also immediately bringing out who you really are. And it's kind of cool because that's really where you want to get to. Yeah. Not the fucking act, but have the act, but be allowed to break out of it and deal with something that's happening in real time. So for me, the best gift is when a heckler breaks into my psyche.
Careful what you say right now.
Oh no,
you're gonna have people.
They'll never win. They can come at me, and even if they know, like, oh well, let's go get him. It's like I have fucking katanas on my back. I'm Rebirth Island.
Motherfucker's Deadpool out there.
It's not it's a no win situation if you step into the fucking comedy ring with me.
The first time I performed at the Laugh Factory, I text Logan a clip of what I'm about to perform, and he texts me, this is fucking terrible. And I'm like, oh, fuck. And then, wait, hold on. You're being real. He loves my comedy. I'm not saying he doesn't, but he's like, you could do better. But you're very, very fucking
But did I say the verbiage like that?
You literally said, this is fucking terrible. I showed it to everybody. They agree. That was like the exact fucking text.
It was probably pretty bad then.
And so I was like, fuck. And then I don't know if you know Enrique. He texted a bunch of comedians that I look up to, and they all got excited that I was performing there, and they all showed up. And my girlfriend was watching me for the first time, and I was like, dude, this is the fucking most pressure I've ever felt.
Right.
Then a heckler goes off on the comedian, but they were right before I got on.
Yeah.
They were going so much, they stopped the show, they escort him out, and then now they're like, anyways, we got another guy coming. I was like, are you fucking kidding?
That's bad.
So I go up, and in my mind, I was like, oh, you know, I did great. And we recorded the whole thing. It was a great time.
Yeah.
2 days later,
you recorded the heckler moment.
Yes, okay. Everything from the beginning to me performing everything. I'm at a house party.
All right, this is getting wordy, but let's keep it.
I'm at a party.
Act two. I'm at a house party. All right.
Do you that song? I like me better. Song. Yeah. I see the artist there, and I'm like, oh, I gotta go compliment him. I love his work.
Love.
I go up to him. I'm like, yo, bro, I love your work.
I love your work.
He's the heckler.
He's the heckler.
Shut the fuck up.
Wait, that was a good story.
I thought it was wordy,
Dane.
You just heckled me while talking about heckling. You just fucking heckled me. I'm fucking done.
Wait.
Was he actually?
That's actually
Wait, was he actually the heckler?
It must have been like a
do you want to hear the rest of the story now?
So I went up to him and I said, "Oh, I love your work." He goes, "Oh, what do you do?" I go, "I'm a stand-up comedian." He goes, "Oh, I just went to a stand-up show and they kicked me out." I go, "Hold the fuck on. When was this?" He goes, "2 days ago." I go, "Laugh Factory?" And he goes, "Yep." I go, "Motherfucker, you ruined my first time."
Wow. And you wait, you have it on film too.
Everything.
That's unbelievable.
God, it was wordy.
That's
shake my hand and say it's a great story.
That's a great story.
Probably get some money from TMZ.
I'm gonna let you open for me next time.
Yeah.
Now you're out there with Joe Coy. It's like, that's awesome. That is a good story,
dude. Censorship.
Censorship,
bro.
I just did Chappelle's summer camp last year, and it was like,
oh, you went to Ohio?
Yeah, man. I know Dave since when I was in New York City, 93. I was like, whatever, 19, and there was Dave. Dave and I were doing early gigs. He was like fucking 11, or I don't know how old he was. And so we were doing these early gigs together, and Dave was always a guy that I kind of put Dave. Listen, Dave is in his own thing. Dave is Dave, and he's a transmitter in a lot of ways. And he was doing that then, and he does it now. He just, again, talk about like coming from his truth and coming from a place that's like it, don't like it, whatever. Like his unique perspective on things and the humanity that he tries to put into those things. It's really amazing, man. He's awesome.
Yeah, so censorship.
Wait, hold on.
I just want to
pin the censorship thing.
Yeah, real
quick, because you went to Yellow Springs.
Yes.
Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
To perform while Dave was doing his thing during COVID, right?
Last year. Not this summer, last summer.
So I'm curious how this worked, because like I remember thinking at one point, like, what's Dave Chappelle doing?
Yeah.
And then he was gracious enough to invite me to a set of his and the premiere of the movie that he was making.
Right.
Then, and I remember thinking, oh my God, this motherfucker wasn't not doing anything. He was doing something that had never been done before.
Of course,
he was putting on shows in his backyard in Yellow Springs, in Ohio, in a cornfield.
Completely trashed.
Hammered.
Amazing.
No, but the film was amazing.
Yeah.
Was your experience out there like, did it feel revitalizing to once again perform again in front of a crowd? Because COVID killed everything, especially for comedians.
It did. It also felt like, and Dave and everybody said, like, this is going to be really unique what you're, and I kind of was like, okay, I get it. But then you get down there and it really felt like being at camp or something. It was what he set up down there and the shows he was putting on. I don't think I'll ever experience anything like it, even if I do it again, that first time of being there and being a part of that. But sharing the stage with Dave, who, dude, check this out. I'm doing early gigs with, I'll make this, it's a long story, very quick. We're doing college gigs together, like we're kids. And we used to go back to back. Back then, I'm naturally energetic. I get fucking excited when I'm on stage. But back then, I was like Tasmanian devil. Like, I would do anything for a laugh. And so I'd go out there and I'd fucking massacre. I'd just be out there just like sweating. And then Dave would go out and Dave was Dave. Dave was kind of like, you know, he'd go out there, he'd go, "Man, someone said to me, Chappelle." And he'd pause. And then he'd think for a little bit. And then all of a sudden, he's killing. And we're backstage, and I said, "Dave, I gotta know, man, how, I'm still learning. I feel like I'm still, you know, I have so much to learn. How are you doing this? Sometimes you're following me, and instantly you're just getting him and killing." And Dave Chappelle, as a kid, looked at me, and he went, "The power's in the silence, man."
Mm.
The power's in the silence. He was just, oh, he's Dave. He operates on a whole different mentality and level, and that's why he's the GOAT.
I love that sentence, though. There's so much power. If you can get comfortable with silence.
Yeah.
Jeff, my manager, sitting over there, he taught me. So what is it? It's if someone asks you, anyone can ask you a question, but that doesn't mean you have to answer, right? And especially when you're doing any sort of press, any interviews, anything, if you can get comfortable just chilling,
right?
Massive impact in that.
True.
Are you worried, on his point, about things you're saying? Are you worried about being canceled? Censorship now, and especially for comedians, is becoming more and more prominent.
No, because I think that it's incumbent upon anybody performing stand-up comedy today to, you want to keep your integrity, but you also want to do one thing. Observe and report from your experience. If it happened to you, if it happened from you, you can talk about it. Anything. But if you're trying to tell somebody else's story through your eyes, that era of stand-up comedy is over. And it actually it should, because it's pretty ignorant Nobody should be speaking on somebody else's story for the sake of getting laughs off it. I've done this. I'm a storyteller. Even all the way back to Vicious Circle, like when I did the crying bit, it's to this day the bit that I can't go a day without somebody writing me about it, because when somebody has a bad day and they're crying, they go, dude, I started laughing. Mm. My mom was dying of cancer when I wrote that bit. My mom couldn't be at the best show I ever did in Boston. And that night when I performed that bit, my mom was in Florida, in Delray Beach. She couldn't make it to Boston. So I gave that bit everything I had, both because I knew it was funny around it, but like how I was really feeling. I was really missing my mom that night. Got on a flight the next morning, brought it down, and got to show her this is what that moment meant to me. And so to be able to observe and report what you experience, you can do whatever, say whatever the fuck you want. Don't let anybody ever put any boundaries at all on that. And if they try to, it's just them, man. It's just people's experience and projecting. What other people think of you has nothing to do with you. So you get up there and you observe and report from your own personal experience, and then you won't worry about being canceled or censored. Still, people might not like what you have to say and think it's garbage, but you're never going to worry. You're going to sleep very well at night knowing, like, I'm doing what I know is my life. I'm talking about my life.
It's Logic said.
I was just going to say
the same thing yesterday.
Literally the exact same thing. We had Logic, the rapper on yesterday, and he was using a word that someone called him. And I said, right. Are you worried about using that word? And he's like, dude, they called me this. Like, yeah. I'm simply reporting what happened.
Right.
I'm not making a story of it. I'm not using it as a slur. I'm just saying what happened.
Right.
And so
there's always going to be, listen, there's going to be vernacular jargon. There's going to be things that you say. There's always going to be something that people are going to find fault with. It's once you're a known comic, once you're known anything, then you have just opened yourself up to a realm of people that there's more people that are not going to be into what you do.
Yeah.
They just are going to be having to hear from their friends or whoever, like, I'm into this person. And then now you've got two people that like you, or one person's like, I'm not into it. So yeah, you're always going to come in and out of favor, I guess. But as long as your integrity is intact, then unless you're like a political comic and you're like, I want to get out there and make statements about, then you got to expect that, you know, your job is to
be critiqued.
Yeah. You know, I might be, what is that called? Criticized about, you know, like, you know, some of my statements. But if that's the kind of comic you want to be, then, you know, like, all right, I lose half the audience, I gain a new audience, and that, you know, otherwise just do your thing from your heart, man.
When you were on this run and you're pursuing this career in the arts, you know, comedy is an art, it's a form of media and entertainment, and you would do a set and show your parents, you know, what you yeah. Did they find it funny? Did they understand what you were building? Or because I remember when I would show my parents some of my videos, that it's like, oh, that's funny.
Yeah,
you rode a bike off a picnic table.
But that's it, right? It's just there's no right. beyond like that's essentially what they said.
Right.
Did you have that, or were they more in tune with what was going on?
Sometimes you wanted them to be in tune and be like, I like that. And then sometimes you knew, like, they're the exact audience that I want to get the opposite reaction, because I know that my generation will be like, I'm into that. So there were certain pieces that early my, you know, mom or dad might be like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
I'd be like, okay, that's good.
Yeah.
I don't want to be milquetoast, but you start becoming like, okay, I'm kind of like easily placed. You don't want to be that. You definitely want to have some, you know, cause some friction, man. You do want to get up there and fucking kick the tires, and, you know, stand-up comedy should be, you know, it should be a little dangerous, right? But it doesn't have to hurt people.
It just, so many people crave acceptance from their parents, and I think a lot of people young people make decisions about what they want to do in their life.
Right.
Based on what their parents want.
Right, exactly.
I've never, ever been a fan of that, but
yeah.
Unfortunately, like, the society has kind of carved that into people's minds.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, I only know that my experience was once I made good on my promise to my parents, which was like, hey, if you support me in this, I said, I'm not taking this halfway. I'm going to do this. And I told my mom, I was like 16 or so. I said, I'm not going to be kind of funny. I want to be one of the best. I want to take this. I want to be for my generation. I want to hit the high watermarks. And so when they see you make good on a promise that only they knew about, really, you know, when it was just talk, you know, when it's just talk. My dad would call me on it. I don't know about yours, but like my dad would say things like, because I was a big dreamer, I'd be like, I'm going to build a lemonade stand and I'm going to have two corners because then I get cross traffic. Nice. My dad would walk and he'd open the front door and he'd look outside and he'd go, I don't see it. I don't see what you're talking about. I said, no, I'm not building. I'm saying I'm going to. He goes, yeah, I don't see until I see it. I don't really. So he was the person who put in me, you better show me.
Oh,
stop talking about execution. All the. Yeah. And that taught me later in life. Keep most of your desire, you know, share it with a confidant, maybe somebody that you love, but don't dispel the energy by telling a lot of people that really don't have your, they may like you, they may care about you, but nobody knows your passion but you. So if you start telling everybody your passion and everybody has a piece of that passion, you're lowering that fuel. Mm-hmm. You need to keep some fire inside of you that some people go like, where are you going? And you're like, I got work to do.
Yeah.
Dude, he's got so many gems. Like
gem drop.
Yeah, it's funny because you look to your predecessors for the gems that you're now dropping on others, right? And it's like, it's like, I think probably was it after 38 you started to pull together all of these wonderful bite-sized nuggets to drop based on the things that you went through. Like, what was like the point where you were like, "Yo, I know some shit."
I just wanted to be. I wanted to grow into an introspective person. And if I was going to be an introspective person, I knew that I had to be willing to share my failures, but also embrace my success, which means I'll tell you about the worst moments of my life. I can tell you the rock bottom moments of my life, and I can share them even a funny way or a serious way, because what I tell people is if you're at a rock bottom moment in your life, don't be so fucking fast to get up and get out. Because there's so much data in failure, you want it. I'm telling you, you almost want things to fuck up sometimes because that data you get from that are the building blocks for the stuff later. So I'll talk about that, but I also, I don't know how you guys feel about this. Like, we're also in this time where it's like, can anybody celebrate? Like, hey, for a minute, I'm in the lead. I got this. And it's okay to be like, I'm fucking special right now. I'm fucking winning right now. And now we all placate and everybody, I feel good about what I, no. Every once in a while, you have to be able to say, I got it. I'm the person you want to fucking vote for. Hand me the baton. I'm winning. Mm. Follow me. Why? Because you know I told you when I fucked up and failed and fell down. And I told you that. Now I'm telling you I'm going to win. So like with this next special, I got Marty Kollner back because I called Marty and said, I'm ready to do something in the holy shit business. Are you? And he knew I wouldn't call him if I didn't think that I had something that I was really, you know, excited about. Because I was going to share some of the failures, but some of the upper high water moments. So embrace the things that you know you're great at. Don't be afraid. It's a little cocksured once in a while. I'd be like, dude, I got a swagger. You don't have to live in like that. Don't be like that all the time. That's like, nobody wants to be around that person. But every once in a while, we got to be able to like fucking puff your chest out and be like, I got this.
Yeah. Be Kanye.
You know?
Be Kanye every once in a while.
I don't know about Kanye. Yeah,
but
maybe taking his class.
That message you're giving about rock bottom is super important to people watching this and people struggling. Because I always say, for me, the biggest catalyst in my life were the moments where my back was against the wall. Nothing spawned more creative. Nothing was more motivational. Nothing pushed me to actually fucking create and move and fire off like so being in the worst.
Let me ask you the question, and it's the hardest question, but truly, it's like you go back in time, you have a moment to adjust something here or there.
Nothing. Not a single fucking thing. Everything I am today is a result of everything I was yesterday.
I got you, man. I completely 100% nothing's ever falling apart. It's only ever falling together. And I lost both my parents to cancer in the same year. I watched both my mom and dad in the same year get sick with cancer and put up the best fucking fight that I'm proud to say I watched and helped them fight. But from those moments, I learned so much about empathy and compassion and being a man and showing up and loyalty. And I learned about the person I didn't want to be anymore too, which was I was kind of a fuck up. I wasn't always the person that you could rely on. I wasn't always the best in my relationships. I got selfish. I did things that was just like but I had to go back and in those moments, especially with my parents, man, it was sad, but there was a lot of laughs even still, even in those dark moments. And from those moments, it gave me information that I needed to be better for all the people that do love me and are around me, or my friends, or then extended fans, because people know, like, oh, if I'm, even if it's just a show, I know if I buy a ticket, my hard-earned dollar, he's going to give me a great performance. And I, everything I meet that way in my life, everybody in my life. And to speak, Logan, back to, like, there was a time when the ego, like, yeah, it hurt, because, and I can't speak, you know, for your experience, but, like, sometimes you think, like, man, I did things that may be not repairable, and it sucks, because then some of these people won't get to know me, that I've become better based on some stupid shit, and some people won't tap back in after that.
Yeah.
And it hurts.
It does hurt.
It hurts.
I can't lie. It does hurt. I've always just wanted to be liked like every other human, like, except my brother.
He's crushing it.
Who loves being hated.
He's crushing it.
But, like, I've always considered myself decent. And sometimes when you do something not decent, you lose people forever, which is sad.
But people who understand that sometimes, especially as men, we have to let the ship leave the shore to realize our mettle. What are we really? And that means sometimes doing juvenile, stupid, dumb, egotistical, whatever, in order to become a real man that contributes and is a contributing member of your society, of your community. So it's like,
I just find that arc so much more real. Everyone has that. Just it varies how big or how shallow the arc is.
Right.
Like that is humanity. That's like life. That's
you ever during sex
growing.
And you're during sex while you're coming, ever say, "I've become the man I always wanted to be. I'm myself."
Yes.
No, man, I don't know you up close and personal, but I've seen it. So as a person that also understands being judged from a distance, I like what you've become. And that's why I wanted to be here when you asked. I was really stoked. So thank you.
Thank you. Well, yeah, no, I wouldn't have become what I am now, a person who I can say I genuinely love. And I haven't always been able to say that without the lows.
Everybody loves a good comeback story.
Listen, I'm going to take you guys out and buy some pants today. How's that?
Yeah, I'm
going to. We're going to Target after this.
I'm
going to
put some on for the next show, for sure. There, it's just last note on that thing. I remember when everything was happening and you were very much, this is the worst thing ever. Like, that was like, this is the worst thing ever. Like, that was your mind state. That was everything. And I randomly, it's funny because I didn't know we were going to be talking about this, but I randomly tweeted like yesterday or 2 days ago, the worst thing that ever happened to you is probably the best thing that ever happened to you. And like, and there were so many people that got it so much, but then there was a lot of younger people usually that were like, that's not true. I lost my girlfriend, left me, my mom, you know, is sick or whatever. And I'm like, homie, you don't understand the things that this is going to teach you, bro.
True.
That's going to set you up forever.
And so. And the weird thing is sometimes the reverse is true. The very thing that you think that you want is leading you into
a
realm that you're
crazy?
Like, I don't even really want the, I just wanted to see if I could. And now I'm here. And
who am I? What is happening?
What is this?
Sometimes the desire is worth more than achieving it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's so funny. Yeah. It's so funny. We were on the Prime bus in the UK, and and KSI's hydration beverage, and we were launching it in the United Kingdom.
I saw the thing with the monkey.
The monkey took my Prime.
Yeah, but it was staged, right?
No.
Oh.
I'm kidding.
We paid the monkey. Well, so everyone asked me. They're like, how did you the monkey take your fucking
Prime? No, I saw the thing where you had to like.
Yeah. No, so we were on top of the bus just having fun, launching our beverage in another country, and Mike said, and this actually like made me a little emotional, he goes fuck the acquisition, this is the fun part, right? Like, we hope one day maybe Prime gets acquired, but honestly, building is totally great. This journey is so much fun. Like, we aren't going to be able to do this again. We can build a completely different company and get that acquired, but what we're building right now, this journey and the process is, I'm learning to love it.
I love that,
and
man.
Enjoy it and feel it and sink into it.
Back on early present. Back on early MySpace days, my whole thing that I put it, I don't know if you remember this, but at the very top of my page and then on my website, it said, don't follow me and don't be a fan if you're not a fan of risks, because I plan on taking a lot of them.
Mm.
That's what I had. And because I like the rebuild, man. I like being a little scared. I like not really knowing. I like that I got to learn something else, and I had to learn some new shit for this special. Once you guys see it, you'll go like, oh, like aesthetically, how did you do? I had to learn a lot. And so I like that, what you're talking about, which is, man, like my heart and soul's into this. What happens when it's the belongs to the world really isn't your
doesn't
journey
matter.
Anymore.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah, man, it's cool. Yeah. Good on you.
Dude, thanks for coming on the Impulse,
bro. This was fantastic.
We did it.
We did it.
Actually,
like, I'm proud of us.
One of my top 10 out of 5.
Are you serious?
Yeah, no,
you
I'm
don't
serious.
Fucking say that
I'm
to
dead
everybody,
serious.
Right?
No, because you have a lot of fucking gems, Dane, and you've been through a fucking lot, dude.
Yeah. I'd like to part two. I think we should part two this. I think we should tease it right
I'd
now.
I'd love to. All right? Part two.
Part two, it's coming. Okay? I'm going to put on some shorts for part two. It's going to get fucking crazy.
Plug your shit. When
oh,
it's coming
so,
out.
So what I'm going to do is, you know, right now I'm in the process of figuring out where I want it to be, but I might just want to do it independently. So if people follow me on TikTok, that's what I've been using lately as like my hub.
Sure.
I have danecook.com, but hit me up on TikTok at danecook, and you'll be the first person to know either where it streams or where you can get it directly. How's sure. that?
You sure. know what's funny? I found out he was on Impulsive on his fucking TikTok. I'm on the fucking show. I'm watching his live stream. I go, what the fuck? He's out. And I literally call the team. I go, are we having Dane Cook
well,
on?
George, that's because you don't read the goddamn text.
You don't read the group chat.
You know what? Fuck you.
Thank you guys for listening to this episode of Impulsive. We love you. Hit that subscribe button. We'll see you next time. Take it easy. Peace.
Yeah.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.